And casting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney, you're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
Thanks for listening to this week's FX Podcast. I'm John Montgomery. Before we begin, I'd like to take a moment to talk about the tips and tutorials section on our site. Jeff, Mike, and I founded FX Guide back in 1999 as a way of creating a place where knowledge could be shared between people in the visual effects and design fields. Thanks to the support of artists around the world, the site quickly took off. We'd like to keep this section going strong and feel as though it's the center of FX Guide. If you've gotten something out of the site in the past, please give something back and contribute to our tips and tutorials section. We've got categories for all the major applications: Flame, Smoke, Shake, Nuke, DF, After Effects, Motion, Plugins, and more. And for those of you that have already contributed, thanks so much for doing so. We appreciate it. This week, Mike Seymour talks with David Skimmel of London-based SohoNet. The company, founded in 1995, has targeted the media and film industries by providing tools and infrastructure to easily and securely exchange information and data between facilities in major cities around the world. Let's go to Mike in Sydney to find out how SohoNet is helping bridge the distance with something that's becoming a required aspect of the creative process, from acquisition to distribution.
You're listening to FX Guide, and we have David Skimmel from SohoNet in London. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Mike.
So, SohoNet, it's an interesting concept. What is SohoNet?
Well, SohoNet's a private, secure network which has been designed to deal with the very specialised requirements of the film and TV industry.
So, tell me, how is SohoNet, say, different from just having a large connection to the internet?
That's a big question, actually. The fundamental thing about the internet is that the internet is a best effort network. It's a network that's designed to deal with lots and lots of transactions, and one that's very easily scaled, so that the more transactions there are, the slower you get your results, but everyone gets a piece of the action. SohoNet's been designed from the other end. SohoNet's a network where we guarantee performance, we guarantee delivery times, it's very predictable. So you're never in that embarrassing situation of, well, you know, it worked pretty well on Wednesday afternoon, and why isn't it working as well on a Friday afternoon?
Now, I know SohoNet's been involved with a huge number of major feature films and stuff, and I'll come on to that in a minute, but what I wanted to do is just take you back to how it started, and basically, you know, who started it?
Well, SohoNet was started by a group of 12 post-production houses in London just about 10 years ago. It was set up really to solve the connectivity problems at the time, because there wasn't a solution available from any of the telcos. The post houses got together and basically shared resources at a very technical level to work out how they could get the best out of whatever offerings there were from the telecommunication companies at the time.
Now, I remember hearing about SohoNet, and in the early days it was basically perceived as being a linked sort of network between the major post houses in London. But in fact, you're now a global network, and can you give us an idea of some of the clients and facilities worldwide that are on SohoNet?
You're quite right. Originally, SohoNet was just around London. That's where its roots were. But it became pretty clear that the real value in the connectivity was over distance. And in the last 5 years, we've expanded now to have connections into Los Angeles with clients like Warner Brothers and HBO. We're into Australia with clients like Animal Logic, Cutting Edge, Weta in New Zealand. We're also in Cinecittà Studios in Rome, Pinewood and Shepperton Studios in the UK. We've got connections in New York. So we really are a worldwide operation, and we can pretty much get to anywhere.
So who were the original post houses that sort of put the group together, and are they still involved?
Pretty much they're all still involved. Going from memory now, we have Moving Pitch Company, Framestore, VTR, Smoke and Mirrors, and now my memory's fading. Just about all of the original companies that were involved with it. There was a couple of ad agencies, and of course, inevitably in this industry, a few of those companies have also been absorbed into others.
One of the things I find interesting about SohoNet is, in doing some research for this interview, I found it very hard to find companies that, I think they call it churning. In other words, companies that adopt the service and then get rid of it, not because they merge or because they go out of business, but literally move on. And it seems like those that have joined the SohoNet pretty much are still with the SohoNet.
Yep. I think the only people that we've had leave the network are regrettably those that have gone out of business for one reason or another.
So that's a pretty impressive track record over 10 years. So what is it that you're offering that works so well? I mean, in terms of, you said it's a private network, but I mean, what does that mean to an individual post house? I mean, what benefits do they see in a private network?
I think the most important thing that we offer is we offer a complete service. We're not just a connectivity company. It's not just about providing a bit of fiber or an Ethernet connection from one point to another. It's about what do people want to do over it and understanding what they want to do over it. Everyone in SohoNet comes from the post-production or production industry in one shape or form. We understand intimately the kinds of applications that people want to run across it. We haven't gone the route that some other companies have of defining those applications and forcing companies to work with a specific way. We don't store the content anywhere. We don't offer set rules on what you can and can't do across the network. Our aim is to basically make sure that whatever anybody wants to do across the network, they can. So we work with the facilities. We're a facilities facilitator, I suppose you could say.
So let's talk about some of the films that you've been involved with, or rather, that members of SohoNet have been involved in. Can you remember the first major feature that was sort of really utilising SohoNet?
The first one that I think everyone talks about is actually going back about 5 or 6 years now, which would have been Lost in Space. There was quite a lot of publicity about how they used the network at that time to enable the post houses in London to collaborate on what at the time was the biggest single project that that the UK had had. I think since then we've moved on enormously, but we proved the concept, which is that by having a really good network between the houses, they're able to collaborate at a very local level, gain work that perhaps they wouldn't otherwise gain, and at the same time be connected to the rest of the world to provide an exceptionally good service from London per se, as well as from other regions. And we see that model expanding out into places like Australia and New Zealand, and it's already starting to happen around Los Angeles.
Yeah, I guess it's really reassuring that know that a number of companies can work together and not be just sort of fighting at each other, tooth and nail, to and being able to collaborate. And I think that's a really great benefit of SohoNet. But let's move the clock forward to some of the more recent projects, because, of course, London in the days of Lost in Space was, a less obvious choice for doing visual effects. But these days, in fact, London and other places like New Zealand with Weta and stuff, it really is no longer about, moving outside that Hollywood model. It's actually quite valid to pick any of those locations for major films.
Yeah, I mean, if we talk about what's been done recently, a good example, would be the Harry Potter films in the UK, where the network has been used for everything from sending the dailies back to Los Angeles on a daily basis, through to holding video conferencing links between some of the facilities for transferring the visual effects material around for review and approval, moving edits around. And also, most recently, on several projects, we've actually been moving around all of the digital intermediate material. So, full resolution scans, full resolution visual effects, have all been moved around the network from the scanning and recording houses and the various visual effects houses working on it.
So I believe that was the case with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I'm sure I read that the DI work that was done on that, as well as a lot of the other work, was involving SohoNet.
Yes, that's right. We put together the network for them. I mean, basically, that was layered upon our existing network. We connected up a new facility for Warner's in Holborn, and That's where, in fact, a lot of the DI work was done. We managed the entire network for them, all the security aspects of it, and worked very, very closely with the production and with Peter Doyle there to make sure that the network did what they needed.
So if you're doing DI work, this is no longer sort of highly compressed frames. This is, you know, really quite enormous amounts of data. Can you give us an idea, you know, practically how that would run? I mean, you know, is it how viable it is to be transferring large amounts of data of, you know, uncompressed 2K res?
Well, at the end of the day, it's all about the amount of bandwidth you've got. Now, around SohoNet, a typical connection for us would be 100 megabits a second. We do have some people that are connected at a gigabit, and that's increasingly becoming the norm. But at the moment, if you took 100 megabit as a kind of standard, we'd be looking at, if you wanted to transfer 10 minutes of material, say, at full 2K res, you're looking at something a little bit over 3 hours to do that. The comparison would be, you know, you drop down to sort of PAL, full res PAL material, that same 10 minutes only, you know, you can transfer virtually in real time.
So that's pretty interesting. What about, I know a lot of HD stuff is now being moved around, especially HD dailies and stuff. Do you have the same kind of comparative figures for what it would be like to move, say, uncompressed HD or in fact, I think most dailies on HD are in fact compressed?
Yeah, I mean, if you take your 100 megabit link as being a sort of a standard by which to judge, uncompressed HD material, 10 minutes of that, you know, that might take you an hour and a half to move it around the network. But typically what people are doing is, you know, MPEG-2 encoding is pretty good now. We've done a whole range of tests, in fact, for many productions who come to us and say, what exactly do we need to do to move this material around, you know, in a sensible fashion? And we've discovered that around about 10 megabits a second of encoding at MPEG-2 gives pretty good results, and quite a lot of people are using that kind of standard to view their HD dailies. Now, if you take that as a form of compression, that's 10 megabits a second encoding, then, you know, the maths are pretty easy. You can move that in real time around a 10 megabit per second link, or a hell of a lot faster if you've got a 100 megabit per second link. You could move 10 minutes of material in less than a minute.
So at that rate, you could actually, you know, easily view, because obviously rushes is going to be quite long. And so if you wanted to have HD on set and you're in Shepparton and you're getting your rushes back through somewhere else, or if you're in any part of the world for that matter, you could obviously play, you know, half an hour's worth of material at that kind of HD res, albeit with the MPEG-2 encoding.
Absolutely. I mean, and that is exactly what people are doing on a daily basis now. I mean, we've been moving as much as 100 gigs of material a day from London back to Los Angeles, but at that kind of standard. The interesting thing, though, is that the way SohoNet's been built is you're not tied into a particular, you know, form of compression or a particular, you know, amount of compression. And so, for example, what often happens is they might use that amount of encoding as the standard for the dailies, but then your visual effects shots, which perhaps a smaller amount of material each day, you can send those across at full resolution. So, you know, you've got a much better view of you know, actually looking at them when you come to review them.
And I think one thing that struck me when researching SohoNet was that your sort of pricing model is specifically designed around accommodating that kind of feature film work, in the sense that you're not actually paying by the megabyte that's transferred, are you?
Oh, no, that's right. I mean, one of the things that we learned in the very early days was that the standard telecommunication model of charging for the amount of data that you've transferred, and they have some very complex models for this, things like 95th percentile, and also as well as a you know, a more easy to understand basic per megabit or per gigabyte of data that's transferred. Those models really don't work for this industry because nobody really knows how much material they're going to move. In the planning stages of a project, you know, we've sat down with productions. There was one recently that was shooting in Rome. they thought they were going to send back about 2 gig a day. They ended up sending about 10 gig a day back. Now, if you're paying for the amount of data, that would have been suddenly a fivefold increase in your budget. What we do is we charge on the size of the pipe, which means you can use the pipe as much or as little as you want. The pipe's there for you. You make a very positive decision that says, well, actually, we'd like to move this data a little quicker, so we'll have a bigger pie.
But, I mean, the other thing, I guess, is, you know, crunch time, I suddenly want to increase it. I mean, how much is this sort of, am I locked in? And also, I guess the other problem is, you know, for some productions, they really want stuff for about 3 months, don't they? And they don't really want to tie in for a 2-year contract. I mean, how does that work?
The way it works is that we're very flexible on the pipes, especially on the international side, because nobody wants to have to commit to a year's worth of 100 megabits a second. That's our job. We take that commitment on. And then we make it available to productions, production companies, facility houses, whoever's connected to the network, on as flexible as a daily basis. We can do it daily, weekly, project-based, monthly-based. Very, very flexible. The only proviso on that is that the tail circuit, that's the final, you know, the last mile is the other word for that, that we run into a facility or into a production. Typically, it's difficult to get those on less than a year. Sometimes we can do 6-month contracts, but typically it's a year.
So could you set up so that you're on SohoNet and then just up and down how much you used it as productions came in, and then between productions when you were slack, could you wind it down?
Exactly, and that's what makes the model work so well. That you know, we can scale the network for an individual customer to suit, you know, their workflow and exactly their budget.
So you must be really well positioned on the move towards sort of HD capture and digital cinematography, because I mean, obviously, one of the advantages is the stuff is sort of pre-digitized, if that makes sense, because you don't have to go through a telecine process. Are you doing any work with HD capturing type productions?
We're doing a lot of research in that area, and we're actually doing a lot of work with, you know, with productions that are already doing it. Yes, we see that as a really interesting area for us. In fact, we're also working. We're working with a number of the established manufacturers on making sure that, you know, they've got all the right interfaces, and we understand what the network requirements are. But we're also working on some very interesting things that I'm afraid I can't talk about just yet in terms of actual capture on set.
Okay, so that sounds interesting. But so you've basically got a system that's like point-to-point, a private network that lets you get around the place. So I guess the killer question is, you know, where are those places? And from what you've described already, you've got Europe, London, of course, from where you started, Los Angeles, New York, and you mentioned New Zealand with Weta and also Sydney. What about, you know, possible expansion up into Asia in particular, sort of Korea, Japan, Singapore, any of those kind of areas?
Absolutely. They're in our long-term plans. We know that we can get just about anywhere in the world. The way we build the network is organically. We build it based upon customer demand. Asia's a really interesting area for us. One of the reasons why we're developing the Australian market at the moment is that we can see that that's where a lot of work is done in Asia. But what we want to do is to, you know, is to make sure that we, you know, we only take on the growth when we're ready to. We don't want to be overexposed as a company, and we want to stay very close to our roots, which is providing exceptionally good service for the people that are connected to us. But we can get just about anywhere. It's all a question of budget, and it's a question of timing.
And so you're really running beside the internet in a sense, because I mean, obviously, people would have clients that would only have internet access, and they might want to send up files for them to look at. So in fact, you've sort of really got a point-to-point private network running. I presume you provide internet sort of connectivity, obviously, for sort of everyday use.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's one of the key things that we think that getting some fibre run into somebody's building, you know, if you're a post-production facility, it really doesn't matter whether you're in London or Los Angeles or Sydney. It's an expensive process. Once we've got that fibre in there, it seems like we should really make sure that the customer can get the most out of it. And one of the things we do is provide internet access, once again, on a really flexible basis. So you might have a 100 megabit connection into SohoNet, but we can provide maybe just a couple of megs of internet for day-to-day use, and then you suddenly have a big FTP transfer you've got to do to somebody who's you know, in some small town in the middle of the States, but all they've got is internet. Well, we can boost up the internet connectivity for you to match whatever they've got at the other end, and in particular work with you to make sure that you can get the most out of that internet connection. You'll never get anywhere like the performance you would across a private network, but we can make sure that we can at least minimize some of the problems that you might otherwise be having.
You touched on something that I think is pretty interesting. You quite often see stuff about people doing accelerators for internet stuff and various tests that seem to have astronomical speeds. And every time I've gone to use it, I never get anything like the so-called rates. So I guess the first question is, you know, can you kind of guarantee a transfer rate? Because that was obviously pretty vital. And secondly, you know, I presume you're aware of these kind of internet claims that that really never seem to be realized. Would you agree that that's sort of an atypical sort of situation? People tend to never be able to get those in a production environment. Is that one of the things that you've come across?
Yeah, I mean, sort of first point really is across our network, yes, we guarantee performance, and you can pretty much work out, you know, from the bandwidth and the amount of data, how long it's going to take to transfer. We do that by working very closely with the companies connected and by effectively tuning everything from IP stacks, making sure they're running the right kind of protocols. You're probably familiar with the sort of bandwidth latency product, which means that for the higher the bandwidth and the longer the latency, then you've got to you've got to take account of that in terms of delays in acknowledgements backwards and forwards. We can work with people to make sure that the applications they've got can be tuned to accommodate that. If they've got an application that maybe can't be tuned enough because the IP stack can't be tuned big enough, then we can put in proxy servers and do all sorts of other things to make sure that they can get maximum performance across our network. We don't find it useful necessarily to run those kind of accelerator boxes across our network because we tune the network ourselves to do that. Where those boxes are very useful though is when you are dealing with an internet-based connection. But it's important to bear in mind that they come with an overhead. Most of these accelerator boxes are very aggressive in terms of their protocol. They typically fire off UDP streams. Some ISPs don't like them very much. You are still dependent somewhat on the network traffic and congestion. So they're not as predictable in terms of their performance. It's certainly true that they can help enormously, but whether they live up to their claims, well, I think that's on a case-by-case and a day-by-day basis.
Well, thanks for talking to us today. Is there any particular country you're next into? I think the last one you conquered was Australia. Is there another one on the horizon, or are you still consolidating in Australia?
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd use the word conquered, but I like that. I like the sentiment, perhaps. We are looking all the time at other areas and see where people want to actually, want to get connectivity. It's difficult to say where we'll be next because we'll be driven by our customers and where they want us to go to next. So I think Asia, you already mentioned, that's very high on the agenda. That could be next. We could be doing a lot more connectivity around Europe. There are areas in Europe that are of interest to filmmakers at the moment, Eastern Europe in particular. And, we may well see some growth in that area.
Well, again, thanks for spending this time talking to us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this week's FX Podcast. Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by using the Contact Us links at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright 2005 FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide LLC.